Hi everyone, welcome to this episode of E-Stress Conversations. I'm here today joined by the author Dušan Čarotar and Dino Bauk. They've come from Slovenia to London to promote their new books. I'm going to have a conversation with them today about their new works, talk a little bit about the themes, and maybe a few questions about translation as well. So maybe Dino, please start with you. The End and Again came out in Slovenia in 2015, and it's been published this week by Istros in translation by Timothy Bogacar. It's been described as a novel about war, romance, and rock and roll. Could you tell us about how you first had the idea for this story and why you were motivated to write it?
First, I wrote the short story, which became the first chapter of this novel. After being chosen by competition to enter the 20 stories to be published in the book, I felt that I have something more to say on this subject, which is kind of Bildungsnovel, like alternative biography about the time and people from the end of Yugoslavia, from times of the end of Yugoslavia and beginning of the Slovenian independence. So that's the...
Let's talk a little bit about the people, because there are four main characters. What was it about these stories that made them the ones that you wanted to tell? Why these people and these characters?
I think that I tried to put in every one of the characters to put some part of me, to include some my personal experience or story, because I'm not too good in making up stories, so I can write only the things that I felt or experienced in through other people also. But so these four characters are, every one of them is telling the part of the story that I felt had to be told about this process of secession of Slovenia from Yugoslavia. And I also wanted to point out the problem of the erased, as the population of 25,000 people who lost themselves literally in this breaking up from the from common country to find themselves lost literally without identity. So after the administrative erasure.
So we're talking about this kind of chapter in Slovene history, which is particularly dark and not spoken about often, is it? I mean, particularly not in Slovenia, really, until recently, I would say, where Yugoslav citizens living in the Republic of Slovenia at the time Slovenia broke away from Yugoslavia, if they didn't officially have papers to say that they were residents of Slovenia, then they were literally erased from government databases. They lost access to healthcare, bank accounts,
passports.
Is that a fair summary for people that?
There's a slight distinction, because it was really done more in a more subtle way, because these people were asked. And we're all also given the chance to gain Slovenian citizenship. So the citizenship of the new country of Slovenia. And if they didn't manage to get the citizenship, maybe they didn't want to, maybe they wanted to keep their citizenship of Yugoslavia, but to stay in Slovenia, they were erased, they were deleted from government database of permanent residents, without even being let know that that happened. So they lost their basic civil rights, basic civil personality, without even knowing that. So they couldn't appeal on that because the erasure happened on one day in February 1992.
Okay.
And the consequences happened in the next three, four, five years for every single person in the different mode. So some of them couldn't have health insurance, couldn't prolong their papers. Some of them were driven out of the country, across the border to Croatia. So very different consequences for a pretty big group of people in Slovenia. Yeah.
And you describe that really well in one of your characters. Is it Dennis who is advised to go and get his papers, and he's busy, and he just, it kind of really encapsulates
he's 18,
how...
He's not really 18 yet.
Yeah.
So that was the part of the story where I write my alternative biography, because I remembered when I was aware in 1997-98 of the problem of the erased, that I, being the son of the Croatian and Croatian father, Serbian mother, living in Slovenia, that I was the one that had to arrange my papers at some point in 1990. I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
I was then, after these years, I was thinking about how my life would change if I just did what I usually have done at that time, at that period of my life, that I would just not do what I was supposed to do. I would go to the party or anything. I wouldn't arrange my papers. My father was there, would ask me did you do that? Did you arrange your paper? Did you do everything that you had to? And I would say, of course I did. And nobody would know. And three years later, I would face the wall of civil debt. That's what happened to these people. They were their personalities were erased. So this was the fear that I felt afterwards for what I could have experienced if I didn't do that.
So much hanging on such a kind of banal bureaucratic practice, and that people just weren't aware of the consequences at the time. I think it's really important, again, that these stories are coming to light, stories like yours. Like Micha Mazzini has written about this, and that's the only other story that I know that deals with the issue. Maybe there are more, but...
There are some in Vojnovic's stories.
One of our
characters, I think. Yeah. And also, I think, Polona Glavan.
Okay.
In her novel, I think she addresses the problem, I think, also. So.
Great. Because I think in general, if we look back at Slovene fiction since 91, since independence, we might expect there to be a lot of literature that deals with the breakup of Yugoslavia and the kind of the aftermath of that for Slovene society. But when I think about it, there's not loads. And I think it's only in recent years that I've started to notice these stories becoming more frequent in terms of like being represented in literature. Do you think that it's something that's changing, and why now are authors suddenly feeling able to speak about that time?
I think that in the first maybe 10 or 15 years after the breakup of Yugoslavia and independence of Slovenia, people in Slovenia, and I think also the writers as being the part of the population, didn't comprehend or feel that this separation was some kind of a stressful or event. That was considered as a success story. So you can't write really great literature on success stories. So everything was fine, and that's, we separated from Yugoslavia and everything was great. We were flying to the moon.
Yes, but we were lucky because we don't we didn't have a war.
War, yeah, yeah. Of course. But I think that now
10 days.
Yes.
After the financial crisis period and austerity and everything, and this when we got the full taste of this neoliberal ideology that really was the ideology that we exchanged for some past ideology that mm-hmm. we left behind. Now is the time that we can fully think about what has happened, because I think that in this period of first 15 years we had idealistic vision of what we achieved, and now we are starting to think maybe what we have lost as a society. And when you think about the losing and losses, then you are maybe prepared to write stories.
Interesting. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Dušan, your book takes us to a different period in history. This is the second novel of yours to be published in English translation, the first being the really well-received Panorama. So Billiards at the Hotel de Bray takes us to the 1940s, to the part of Slovenia where you are from. Mm-hmm. For readers that might not be familiar with this town, with this region, Prekmurje, could you maybe describe it for us to set the scene and maybe explain why it's significant?
Yes, Prekmurje is one of the region of Slovenia. It is on the northeast part, and it is situated at the border of with Hungary and Austria, and on the south with Croatia. It is a very small part of Slovenia, but it has we speak a different language. Nowadays it is dialect. Yes, but in 200 years ago it was official. It was officially language, because we have our dictionary, we have a vocabulary, and we have a grammar in this Prekmurje language, and some of the books was also translated in Prekmurje, like New Testament and the other books that was translated by Protestant preachers. So, but especially it's important that this part of Slovenia was more than 1,000 years part of the Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
In later period, part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, but first it was part of the past Yugoslavia in. After the First World War was finished. But in the beginning of the Second World War, the Prekmurje was again occupied by the Hungarians. During the war, all this time, in 1,000 years history, this region was multicultural, multi-religious, multilingual, and multi-ethnical. So until April 26 in 1944, there were lived Slovenes, Hungarians, Croatians, Germans, Gypsies, and also a large community, Jewish community. And in just a single day, on April 26 in 1944, all the Jewish population was deported in concentration camps in Poland, on Auschwitz. And one of them was also my grandfather, Franz Schwartz, who is one of the main character in this my novel. But he's like a ghost of in this novel, because he he first he said only one replique, and just in the end of the novel he said only two or three words, but in general it is more novel about atmosphere, about background of the, this night in April 26, and in whole story is written just on the day when the Red Army liberate this region, Prekmurje, and especially my hometown, Murska Sobota.
Atmosphere is a really important word, I think, here. It's really interesting that you, straight away you answer my question, because I had written down who is Franz Schwartz to you. I got a sense that this was a very significant, that there was backstory behind this character. He's described in the novel as a fugitive and a newcomer returning to his lost home. So he was, he for you was based on the memory of your grandfather.
Yes. I have lucky. I knew my grandfather. He died when I was 15 years old. But it, what is important, he never spoke about this part of his life. So at the beginning, when I was trying to write down the story about this Jewish community in Prekmurje, in Murska Sobota, there was almost nothing new. I have to made a huge research and because it there was a everybody in my hometown they know that some days or and there was a Jewish community, but they didn't speak about them.
Nobody dared to do kind of the looking back and the digging into that story.
So it is all the story is reconstructed by the I don't know historical evidence or books, and in the other side it is the story about the grandfather who never spoke about this story. So I was trying to give them back some dignity or to about to this Jewish community, which is absolutely disappeared in Prekmurje. In the nowadays, only one Holocaust survivor still lives in Murska Sobota, and she is now 89 years old, and after her death, there will be no living Jews that could testify about this horrible story.
Has she read your book? Do you know? Have you met this woman?
Yes, she is. Yes.
That must be a really kind of.
Yes. This novel is now after 10 years when it was published in original Slovene. It is important somehow because after this. The story is somehow given back to the city. So nowadays everybody actually know about the Jewish community in Murska Sobota, about his history, and even some parts or house or streets or are given back the original name that it was in in the name in the time of the, when they are lived there.
That's an amazing testament to the power of literature.
Yes, I was surprised, and somehow, really, 5 years after the novel was published, they built the first monument on the railway station in Murska Sobota, and the sign from this railway station was deported Jews in 1944 to Auschwitz. And also in the on the place where the old synagogue in Murska Sobota was stand, there is also the sign that this is the place where the synagogue was stand.
Amazing.
Yes.
So both books, in a way, are about giving a voice to those who haven't previously had a voice in Slovene literature. deal with very different periods, very different circumstances, but actually there's a kind of, there's a common theme between the two.
Yeah.
About kind of giving something back, giving light to experiences and voices that haven't necessarily been represented in fiction before.
Yeah, this is my approach to, as I say, to poetry or to literature or in general. That I still believe that literature is still have to give the voice to the people that they don't have, or this is this old-fashioned Eastern or Central European approach to literature. We still believe that we are that this high or quality literature or writers are like a somehow prophets. That this literature is not just a storytelling for reading on if we are bored
or on the beach.
Yes,
sure.
But so I think that Dinos and my books is it still has this
purpose.
Purpose. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. There's a, there's another point of that that I just thought of now, that there's so many books on let's say Holocaust,
mm-hmm.
and there will be, I think, many books on the race question once they have started to be written. But even if it is, if it has that message, every one of them is unique, and I think that these two books are also about books about two cities.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is the book about Murska Sobota, and this is the book about Ljubljana. Yeah, yeah. And all the people, except those Jews and except those erased who were living with them and who felt and who stayed to witness the emptiness that was left behind when these people were driven to Auschwitz or Izgnati, or driven out of the country,
when they
out of the
fled
Slovenia.
The country.
No, they even didn't even fly the country. The erased were either sent out of the country, if they were legitimized by the police and they didn't have the documents.
Deported.
Yeah, yeah. They were deported. Or they closed themselves into their own apartments. So they were out of the society in either way. I mean, even if they stayed in Slovenia, they were hiding from everybody else. So there was this emptiness left from them for everyone else to witness. So that's so it can never be just a story about some political issue. It's always something more, I think. So.
It's ethic. I'll take it. Ethic.
Yeah.
Not just about politics.
Thanks for those ideas and those thoughts. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the translation process, because like we've just said, both books are quite specific in their location and with the subject matter that they deal with. I mean, obviously, like all good books, there are universal themes that we can draw out, but Dina, how did you find the process of your work being translated? Were you worried that there might be aspects that would be difficult to convey to another audience, or?
Yeah, it was pretty. When it was translated to German, I didn't have that much worries, because I knew, because I don't speak German, so I knew if I won't be disappointed, because I couldn't be. So, when it was translated to German, I felt that it would be the good translation by the amount of questions that were given to me by the translator. So I thought that he is really grasping the subject, and he really wants to know what I wanted to say so that he can say it in German. So it was pretty much the same with this English translation, where Timothy was really gave me the feeling that he is trying to tell the story as close as to original as it can be. And then after also After his hard work, then came the Susan's editorial work, which really felt professional and involved. So I think that this is the, I think it's, it must be really good translation. And I'm not someone who can judge, but I, when I read it, it felt good, it felt right. So mm-hmm. I think it's very well done.
It's been a positive first experience.
Yeah, really. I was scared because when translated to Croatian, which I speak, and Serbian and English, I would see if mm-hmm. it wasn't all right. So that was something that I didn't have to worry in this case.
Dusan, for you, you've worked with your translator Rolly Grau before. I know he did a magnificent job of Panorama, and I'm yet to fully read the extent of his translation in this novel. But how was it for you this time, the process of being translated?
Yes, I'm thankful, and I met with Rolly Grau. He really made a great job with Panorama. And so I fully trust in him, so I know that he's really good, excellent actually. And during the process of translating the billiards, he knew much more than I. he made a huge research also. He knows everything about Murska Sobota, about the history background, and he knows the name of all the streets in original. He also googled and finds some details about the characters, because in this novel all the characters are somehow historical persons, they are real. So so Rolly made a really perfect research, so it was easy to talk with him, or when he asked something. I'm really satisfied and happy that he for about this translation, so I have no complaints.
Great. Yeah, there's a lot of background work that goes into researching those specific times and contexts, and so yeah, I can tell that you're both really pleased, and I'm sure lots of people will be really excited to be able to read your books in English translation. The both of you have got events coming up tonight in London, and then you're in Oxford tomorrow.
Yes.
After this week and looking ahead, what projects have you got on the horizon? Are you writing more fiction, Dino? Are you constantly, because you also work as a journalist for?
No, I'm a solicitor, but I also write columns for the papers in Slovenia.
Yeah.
That, and I'm really getting on to write the next. I hope it will be a novel or
great.
Something. So I'm striving to write some pieces that I hope they will tie up in some something that could be published in a year or two.
We'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
Exciting. How about you, Dusan?
I'm actually finishing the novel, and it is again a story about Murska Sobota, my hometown, especially about one of the person that is also mentioned in Billiard. This is the architect Franz Novak. He's one of the architects who built the Blok Stanovanja.
Flat,
yes, on the place where the Murska Sobota synagogue was stand. So this is the story about this architect, because he's famous and well known in Murska Sobota, a very important architect. He also built a primary school where I used to go, so, and a railway station and other public building. So it is the stories about this place that I remember from my childhood.
Exciting. They're almost a kind of sequel of sorts.
Yes.
To Billiards at the Hotel de Broye.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, it's been really great to chat to you both. Thanks for taking the time to to speak with me and for the E-Stress Conversations podcast. And look forward to hearing you both talk this evening. And I'd encourage everybody to check out the books.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.